You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every Monday through Friday during the Razorbacks football training camp, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas coach Sam Pittman met with media members yesterday after practice. It was the first day of Rice preparation for the Razorback football team. The preseason window, it's in the rearview mirror now. They're going to practice again today. They will have a mock game tomorrow, Saturday, at Razorback Stadium. And then next week, they'll begin their normal game preparation for Rice. Matt Jones with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette today. Tom, you were at practice yesterday. What were some things that stood out to you?
Well, it was a very short window to watch practice, and a lot of guys in green, as Sam Pittman pointed out in his post game, I think, or post practice. I think probably one of the biggest things I took was in camp, there was a stretch there in the middle of it, and I think he named the practice numbers, like practices 10 through 12 or something in that range, where he was a little bit frustrated with the offensive tempo. And so that's how quickly, you know, how quickly you're getting out on your blockers, how quickly the snap gets to KJ Jefferson, and he reads what he needs to read and he makes a decision. So what we were seeing a lot in camp was the defensive aggression was just very fast, how quickly guys were getting in. The days of read and react defenses are essentially over. Defenses want to impact quarterbacks immediately. They want to mess up mesh points. You know, they want to get in there and cause fumbles and confusion where the quarterback is reading with the running back in that mesh area. So he says it's improved since then. And honestly, it had to, because the Arkansas defense is going to be very similar to many that they will see this season. So a lot of guys in green, but as he said, by Monday, he thinks just almost all of them will be out of green and ready to go for the opener. The biggest question marks are star receiver Treylon Burks and punter Sam Loy, who is the most questionable for the opener. And it looks like Reed Bauer will punt. And whether or not they have Treylon Burks is probably a subject to be decided next week.
What do you see with the wide receiver unit, though, without him, Tom? Well, I mean, obviously he's a great player, but how much does it impact this offense if he's not on the field?
Well, I just think KJ Jefferson had a strong comfort level with Treylon Burks. And I'm talking about throwing balls into 50-50 situations that his man would make the catch. And I don't know if there's anyone else that's to that level, and I don't think there is. So that means that Trey Knox has got to get open more. That means that we're going to probably see Ketron Jackson from the jump. And I don't know if he's going to start game one, but he's going to be heavily in the rotation. Guys who've had good camps, like Kendall Catalan, I think we're going to see a good bit of him. John David White has flashed. Bryce Stevens has flashed. And he and Jaquelin Crawford, in my opinion, both fast guys, both can play the slot, but their hands are the biggest question marks. We've seen them make some great catches, and we've seen drops on catchable balls. And then Davion Warren, what is his health going to be like? Because he was having a breakout year when he got hurt. So it's going to be an intriguing situation to watch who he trusts at receiver if Treylon Burks is not available game one.
The left guard position between Brady Latham and Luke Jones, that's not settled yet. I guess that's really the one starting position that there's some questions about going into game week or game week. What are your thoughts there between Latham and Jones?
Well, Latham has been with the ones a lot more recently. It's been a string of more than a week, I believe, he's been with the ones. So I feel pretty comfortable Latham's going to get the start there, and that Luke Jones will be a high-quality backup and is going to see playing time. I think the right guard position, where Ty Clary has been in a green jersey lately, and yesterday was a good example. Both Dalton Wagner and Ty Clary were in green jerseys. When they did some group drills, Wagner was with the first group, but Bo Limmer was the right guard with the first group, and Ty Clary came in with the two. So to me, right guard is one of the biggest question marks. And then the defensive line. I mean, Sam Pittman did not want to name the guys yesterday. He says the depth chart probably comes out Wednesday. But from what we've seen, there's a pretty good chance Big John Ridgeway, 6'5", 320, is going to be starting on the interior, likely with Isaiah Nichols. And the defensive ends, I think we're going to see a very solid rotation. And I think Dorian Gerald has probably solidified himself. And Trey Williams seemed to be, and then he had a little tweak on Monday, and we've seen a little bit more of Jashad Stewart. But I think between those guys and then, like, Eric Gregory is going to get plenty of time, and Zach Williams, we think, they have a chance to be deep on the D-line if everyone plays their assignment and executes.
Sam Pittman out of the Catfish Hole the other night said that you'll probably see a rotation of about 8 defensive linemen. He said that, and then he started naming off names, and it was more than 8. And so it's obvious that he really likes that group of defensive linemen. Another note that came out of his radio show the other night, Tom, we mentioned this yesterday, but we really didn't get into it, that I thought was kind of interesting, was that John Stephen Jones is going to be their third string quarterback behind KJ Jefferson and Malik Hornsby. You and I have talked about that third string job, you know, at a few times throughout the preseason. What do you think set John Stephen ahead of the other two, Cade Renfro and Lucas Coley?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't think we saw enough in camp to make any distinguishing, you know, decisions between those guys. It's probably experience and maybe just kind of calm, because, you know, Renfro has been up and down, and there were times where Renfro was dropping dimes on people, and Lucas Coley, we know he's got mobility and we know he's a dual threat. So, you know, I think they're in decent position if they had to go 3 deep at quarterback. You know, maybe not great position, but decent position if they had to go to number 3. And I did mean to mention Markell Utsi and, like, Mateo Soli. So that probably is taking you on the D-line. That's probably taking you up to about 9 guys right there.
We're going to preview Texas A&M here in a few minutes with Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com. Tom, the A&M series has really been I don't know, perplexing, maybe the right word. I mean, we're into the third coaching staff, and I know Sam Pittman has only played him one time or coached against him one time, but we're into the third coaching staff that hasn't been able to beat Texas A&M. 4, if you count the interim year with John L. Smith. This has been a series that has frustrated Arkansas so many times because, you know, on paper, it appears that there's a pretty wide chasm between Arkansas and A&M, but when they get into these games, it seems like just about everyone they play has been really competitive, really winnable for Arkansas, and they just haven't been able to break through. Maybe the A&M series, the Mizzou series, those feel like the two that whenever Arkansas can finally turn the corner in those series, maybe that's when they start turning the corner as a program, you know, becoming a winning program, getting into bowl games, things of that nature.
I agree. It's a strong indicator. And every one of those coaches, with the exception of John L. Smith, which the losing streak started in 12 with the big Johnny Manziel game down there. But every other of the coaches had a chance to beat A&M. And honestly, in 14 and 15, I believe, Arkansas should have won those games, and they just didn't. And then even Chad Morris, both games were tight. I think one was a 3-point and one was a 4-point game. Ty Story was driving the team in the 18 game and threw an interception late. And then in the 19 game, Arkansas was on the move again. And I'm not sure if they got inside the red zone, but they were down in scoring territory and couldn't come up with a score to make up that 4-point gap. You know, last year was a little bit more of a separation, largely because Arkansas could not impact Kellen Mond. He just did what he wanted back there. And it was a shootout and the Razorbacks could not hang in that game. But I agree with you. I think it's just been so frustrating. Arkansas still has a pretty handy lead in the overall series between the teams because they dominated in the Southwest Conference, and they won all 3 when the Southwest Conference rivalry resumed in 9, 10, 11. A couple of really good games in there, including one of the greatest comebacks in Arkansas football history in 11. But since then, just nothing but frustration against the Aggies.
It's going to be interesting when the SEC expands to add Texas and OU because, you know, Greg Sankey had the comments on the radio station in Jacksonville this week where he said, we need to have our teams rotating through campuses more often. And the, you know, there's a real strong indication that whether it be through pods or permanent opponents, that maybe the divisions are potentially going to go away in order to create more matchups. And so it's going to be interesting, you know, if you're Arkansas, you're going to want to play Texas every year. Obviously, you know, that's a big game for the fan base. But, you know, who are the other teams that you keep? To me, I think you keep Texas A&M on there because of the long-term history that those two programs have going back, as you said, to their Southwest Conference days.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion and argument about how they do this. But if you're an Arkansas fan, wouldn't you want Texas, A&M, LSU, and Missouri kind of at the minimum? And, I mean, there's ties to Ole Miss that go back so far. So, and that's five. And then you start getting into, well, then how many – I don't know how they're going to reconcile all this, but I'd like to see those five teams. And Oklahoma, to be honest with you, I'd like to see them play all of them every year.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Each day this week, we have looked at the Razorbacks' opponents during the month of September, and we'll conclude today with a look at Texas A&M. The Razorbacks and the Aggies are scheduled to play September 25th down in Arlington at AT&T Stadium. We're joined today by Olin Buchanan of texags.com. Olin, appreciate you joining us.
I'm glad to be with you. Any day to talk college football is a good day.
If you get a chance, texags.com. That's texags.com. Olin, let's start with this. A&M had such a great year last year. You know, it felt like maybe the right or wrong, only year three for Jimbo Fisher. Like maybe there was some heat on him to perform, and of course he did it. What were your thoughts about how they did last year and maybe how that sets them up for future seasons under Jimbo?
Well, first of all, I think the only heat that he ever feels or you hear about is, you know, coming from the national media, because everybody at Texas A&M and everybody at College Station understood the job that he faced and was very pleased with the trajectory of the program. And then I think last year was just kind of I don't want to call it a breakout year, but I mean, well, maybe it was. You know, they finished number four in the country. They had a good argument to get into the playoff, even though they didn't. Their only loss was to Alabama. Well, no shame there. And again, that was against an all SEC schedule. Remember, they weren't even supposed to play Florida last year. So, you know, the potential was there, you know, if they had played their non-conference games to go 11-1, maybe 12-1, which we don't have those kind of seasons down here or haven't had many of those down here. So, I feel like that the foundation he put in place is finally starting to pay dividends. And I think that Aggies are confident. They're always optimistic, sometimes a little bit more so, but I think they're very confident about where the program is going moving forward, and they're expecting a pretty good year this year.
I thought A&M's argument to get into the playoff was really bolstered by the way the championship game went against Ohio State. Alabama beat Ohio State by the same score they beat the Aggies during the regular season. From afar, the big storyline down there has been who's going to replace Kellen Mond. They named Haynes King the starting quarterback recently. What have you seen from him? How does he compare maybe to what Mond did last year?
Well, we haven't seen much from him because, you know, like most places now, they close practices. We did see him play, you know, in mop-up duty here and there last year. He showed against Alabama that he runs the ball really well. We knew that. He showed against South Carolina that, you know, he can make some difficult passes. He threw a 42-yard touchdown pass, I think it was, to a tight end. It was a really nice throw. But we knew he could do that. I think Haynes came here with all the physical tools that you would expect from a guy that's going to, you know, hope to start in the Southeastern Conference, but he's really fast. He runs a 4.45. Again, he doesn't have the shotgun arm that a Nick Starkel or even the guy beat out Zach Calzada has, but he's, you know, it's more than strong enough. I mean, it's more than adequate. His dad was he played for his dad at Longview High School. They won a state championship his junior year. So he has kind of that football savvy or acumen that comes with growing up with the game. I think that someday he might be as good, if not better, than Kellen Mond. I don't know if it's going to be this year. I think that's expecting a lot from a guy in his first year as a starter. But I do think that that you could be cautiously optimistic because all the physical gifts there. Jimbo Fisher raved about him as a, you know, last year, say, in the spring, because he was saying that he had picked up. They say Jimbo's offense is really complicated. We've talked to former quarterbacks he had at Florida State, like Christian Ponder and EJ Manuel. They would say it's a very complicated offense to understand and pick up and know what to do. And he said that Haynes picked it up faster than anybody ever has. So when you take the physical tools that he has, and apparently, if you believe what you're hearing, already has a, I don't want to say a mastery, but a really good understanding of what Jimbo's offense is and what he expects, I think you can go in to the season cautiously optimistic that that Haynes King can come in and run the offense effectively.
It's interesting to me what he has around him offensively. I mean, a lot of or some notable skill players back, like Isaiah Spiller and Anaya Smith and Jalen Weidermeyer, who I thought was really good at tight end last season for the Aggies. Kenyon Green, the, you know, really good left tackles back. But I thought, you know, one of the strengths of A&M last year was how good their offensive line played, and they lose four of their starters. Just kind of take me through that dynamic of what they have on offense with the skill players back, but they've got to figure out, you know, what's going on their offensive line.
Yeah, their skill players, I think, are probably as good as anybody. You mentioned Anaya Smith, and he was the guy that started running back, and they moved him to the slot, and that's where he's best. And you got Isaiah Spiller, who's, I think, quite objectively, is one of the best running backs in the country. I'm not going to say he's the best, but he's in the conversation. And quite frankly, the Orange Bowl MVP was his backup, Devon Achane, who qualified for the Olympic trials in the 100 and 200. He was a true freshman last year. You mentioned Weidermeyer. They also have Caleb Chapman coming back from injury. He was kind of their deep threat. He had two 50-yard catches against Florida, but he tore his ACL on a 50-yard touchdown catch that tied that game. So having him back will, you know, should add more of the deep threat potential to this offense. They became a running offense last year after he got hurt because that was the best way to win. So skill-wise, they're pretty much loaded. Now, you're right. There's the questions with the offensive line when you got to replace four starters. It's a good thing that the one starter you have coming back is an All-American. Now, I would not be surprised if two freshmen, true freshmen, started in the offensive line this year. Jimbo Fisher has shown that he's not afraid to start a freshman, especially even in the offensive line. Kenyon Green did. And they've got a couple of guys that Bryce Foster and Reuben Fothery that they're really high on. Now, that said, I don't know that they will. Luke Matthews at center. Yeah, he's the latest of all the Matthews boys that have played here, Jake and his brother Kevin and Mike. He would likely be the starting center because of experience, things like he's got a bad shoulder. If his shoulder holds up, then he's the starting center. And quite frankly, they felt like he could have started last year if the shoulder wasn't an issue. So that's one area that's going to be really interesting. One position is going to be interesting to look at. Here's what I'm going to tell you about the offensive line. You can choose to believe me or not. The line individually will be more talented. The guys they have on the line this year individually will be more talented than the guys they lost. I don't know that they will play as a unit as well as the guys they lost who, you know, when on a pass rush, when they start stunning and twists and all the, you know, running games, are they going to be as adept at passing off, you know, hey, you come off this guy to block this guy. When your running game calls for you to just block this guy and get off of him and go get the linebacker or a safety, are these guys, even though they're more talented, are they going to be as adept? If a guy's coming in on a run blitz, are you going to know to pick that guy up? which is something that a guy like Jared Hocker did really well last year. Layden Robinson, who will replace Jared Hocker, if you go one-on-one with him, he's going to block you all day long. I don't care who it is. But he's got to prove that when they start moving around and shifting and things like that, does he understand who he's supposed to block? And that's the kind of thing you got to worry about. Projected left guard, Akinola Agumbi, they think he's going to be an absolute star. And they brought in a guy from Tennessee, Jameer Johnson, to maybe play either the right or the left tackle position, but we don't know that he'll start because the freshman father he's played so well. So they have guys that they really feel good about athletically and skill wise and all those things. They just got to, you know, put it together and prove that they can play as a cohesive unit as well as last year's team did.
Let's move over to defense, because I think that could be the strength of the team. I was down in Texas a couple of months ago and picked up a Dave Campbell's, and they had four returning starters on the cover of Dave Campbell's, called them the new crew. I guess a reference to the old Wrecking Crew defense down in College Station. Eight starters back on defense. Tim Elko has done a really nice job of building this defense since he came over from Notre Dame, top 10 defense last season. What do you see from them defensively that has made them so good? And of course, they've got so many players back who were part of that last year.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I believe it's actually nine starters back, and then two super seniors that played a lot decided to come back too. So they got depth on top of that. They're really good against the run. And I expect that'll be the case again this year, even though they've got to find a replacement for Buddy Johnson, who was kind of the heart and soul of the defense kind of guy, very productive, led by example and, you know, emotionally. He was drafted by the Steelers and looks like he's going to make that team. So that's those are some big shoes to fill, but everywhere else you feel really good about what they've got. DeMarvin Leal is as good a defensive lineman as there is in the country. They got him playing defensive end. They can move him inside. He's 290, moves really well. They can move him inside if they need to. Tyree Johnson, as a defensive end that's played really well for him in the second half of last year after Michael Clemens got hurt. Michael Clemens got in some trouble last night, so he's indefinitely suspended. I think he'll be back on the team. He's a guy that had four sacks in five games before he hurt his foot last year and missed the rest of the season. So he's like 24 years old. Seems like he's been here forever. They kept waiting for him to have that, you know, to live up to his awesome potential. And last year it looked like he was doing that. I think McKinley Jackson is a guy you may not have heard of as a defensive lineman, but you will. So they're just really good in the defensive line. Aaron Hanspard was a first-year starter last year and had a really good year. Not a great year, but a really good year. And I think that in his second year, you can expect him to be better. But I don't know that he's the run stopper that Buddy Johnson is. And I think that's something that you have to wonder about, even though they've got like four guys that were highly recruited that they love and they feel like they've got the guys capable of replacing Buddy. But again, until someone actually does it, until they get out there and play, you know, good teams, I think, you know, you have to have a certain amount of, like I said, cautious optimism. The secondary, I think, will be better than it was last year, and it needs to be. They played pretty well in the secondary, but they did have a tendency to give up some big pass plays. You remember against Arkansas, they had one, I believe, just before the half and allowed Arkansas to score. Part of that, though, the big plays they gave up, part of it was because you were playing Mac Jones and Kyle Trask and Sam Howell. But if you want to be the new Wrecking Crew, you've got to at least make those guys hold them below their average production. I think what makes a Wrecking Crew, quote, defense is if when you play the really good teams, the really good offensive players, and they don't produce at their average rate, if you know what I mean. That's what the old-time Wrecking Crew did. What A&M did last year was they were really good. It took really good teams, really good offenses could have success against them. Kyle Trask had success against them. Sam Howell did. Obviously, Mac Jones did. So it's probably the best defense they had had in maybe since 93. But until you make the really good quarterbacks and the really good offenses struggle, you know, you're not a wrecking crew defense. But they were ninth in the country overall. With so many starters coming back and not playing Mac Jones and not playing Kyle Trask and probably not playing Sam Howell, that gives you a pretty good reason to believe they could be at least as good as they were last year.
A couple of more for you, Olin, before we get you out of here. Seth Small, when he makes his first field goal this year, it'll be the 50th field goal of his career. He's been so good, had the game winner against Florida last year, had some 52 yarders, you know, during his career. Just how big of a weapon is he for the Aggies?
Well, you know, Seth is a good kicker. He really is. And he has a lot of range. He had a big kick, you might remember, against Arkansas a couple of years ago from about 50 yards out that at the time gave A&M like a 17-0 lead, but it turned out being huge because Arkansas came back. And I think that game didn't end until there was an interception around the A&M 20 with like a minute to go. But Seth also has a tendency to shank some. He missed a real short one against Auburn last year. He missed a 39-yarder against Alabama. So he's the one against Florida, the game winner. It wasn't the prettiest kick, but, you know, it went through the upright. So he's one of those guys that has a really good average, but he's been fortunate to get a couple of bloopers to fall in for him too. So you still kind of you feel confident. That's why I go back to that cautiously optimistic line. You feel confident when Seth goes out there and he is a weapon, but you still kind of hold your breath too.
Let's get you out of here on this. Arkansas and A&M, they've got 3 years, maybe 4 years left in that game in Arlington through 2024. I know Ross Bjork seems like he really wants to get out of there, you know, based on his public statements. It's such an interesting deal because things have changed so much since they, you know, originally went to that agreement. Kyle Field's been overhauled. They've renovated Razorback Stadium up here, bowled in the north end zone, and then, of course, the SEC move for Texas A&M. What are your thoughts on this series? And, I mean, it seems like the tea leaves are saying that this thing's not getting extended past 2024. I think we're all sure of that. But, you know, just kind of how this has gone and what that location has meant for the series.
Well, the games have definitely been interesting, and I like that I only have to drive a couple of hours, and there's plenty of hotel space and all that, you know. All that said, you know, it's obviously convenient for us, and I guess for y'all too. All that said, I think college football is best when it's played on campus. I like going to Fayetteville. I actually lived there for about 3 or 4 months, maybe 6 months when I was in middle school and going to Woodland Junior High. So I like going up to Fayetteville. It's pretty up there. I think people are pretty nice and there's, you know, things to do. So I would enjoy that trip every other year. I enjoyed the trip went up there in 2013. So I just like college football on campus. I don't know how Arkansas feels about that. Maybe they prefer going down to Dallas and, but for me, and I think for most Aggies, we like the idea of playing the game on campus and actually going to Fayetteville instead of playing in a pro stadium.
I think the current coach and the current AD are in line with your thinking there. And there's been so much turnover within the coaches and the ADs at these two schools over that time too, which is, you know, changes things some as well. Olin Buchanan of TexAggs.com. Olin, we appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
Head over to WholeHogSports.com this weekend for more of our coverage on the Razorbacks. Now that the preseason is over, this podcast is not going to be daily anymore. We're going to move back to a different format, similar to what we had last football season. We will produce a podcast 2 times each week, once to recap a game, once to preview the upcoming game. We'll be back with a podcast next week to preview the game against Rice and give you more thoughts from our staff on the Razorbacks football team. I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, everyone.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.